There was spokesman Hodding Carter, point man for 100 days of explaining American policy towards the hostage crisis, imposing what amounted to a news blackout, a series of no comments on all questions about efforts to negotiate the hostages' release.
At this point, official comment by the administration on each proposal, suggestion, or rumor that may be raised in general or specific terms from a variety of sources is neither necessary nor productive.
This instantly touched off a new round of speculation that the hostages may soon be released. One explanation, the possibility that the spokesman might have misspoken yesterday when he ruled out any admission of American guilt or complicity in the Shah's alleged crimes. Such an admission, later to be repudiated, could help get the hostages out. Marvin Kalt, CBS News, the State Department.
Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko arrived in India today on a scheduled official visit and met almost immediately with Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. The talks went on for about 3 hours. Apparently, Mrs. Gandhi is urging the Soviet Union to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan and to do so quickly. An Indian spokesman said Gromyko did not make any commitment. In any case, Washington is proceeding with its preparedness plans in the Persian Gulf area, and Ike Pappas reports.
According to Pentagon sources, Oman, Kenya, and Somalia, three nations that border on the strategically important Indian Ocean, have tentatively agreed to permit the United States to use existing ports and airfields and pre-position arms, equipment, and fuel in the event of a future emergency in the Persian Gulf area. The sources stress the word tentative, saying that details of the agreements have to be worked out before they become formal. In exchange, the United States has agreed to pay for improving the ports and airfields to be used and to provide Oman, Kenya, and Somalia with additional arms. The United States is not seeking to establish permanent bases in these countries, but does want to be able to bring in troops from the United States to forward locations as rapidly as possible, mostly by air, if a military showdown with the Soviets in the Middle East develops. Ike Pappas, CBS News, the Pentagon.
More news after this.
San Francisco, we've got a lot more Mexico for you. We're Mexicana Airlines, with the only nonstop flights from San Francisco to Mexico. Three times every day, we fly nonstop to Mexico's most exciting destinations. Sunny, sandy Mazatlan, cosmopolitan Mexico City, and charming Guadalajara. Mexicana even has a special low-night coach fare to Guadalajara and Mexico City, and easy connections to most of Mexico's favorite resorts. And as if all this weren't enough, there's Mexicana's famed one-class luxury service with continental meals, French champagne, and the warm, friendly feeling of Mexico. So come fly Mexicana. It's a whole lot more of what you go to Mexico for.
When you're going to Mexico City, only Mexicana lets you make stopovers in Mazatlan and Puerto Vallarta at no extra airfare. So see your travel agent or call Mexicana.
There hasn't been as much snow as people would like, but the Winter Olympics open officially tomorrow at Lake Placid, New York. Still up in the air, though, the controversial question of the Summer Olympics in Moscow. Richard Wagner reports.
At a news conference in Lake Placid this evening, the International Olympic Committee announced that the body has rejected the American proposal to cancel, postpone, or move the 1980 Summer Games from Moscow. This decision was not unexpected, but there was speculation the IOC might announce it would consider the U.S. proposal at a later date, sometime before the May 24th deadline for team entries. Now it appears the IOC will not do that. Lord Kalanin said that although no formal vote was taken, all members were agreed that the Games must be held in Moscow this summer. No immediate reaction from the United States Olympic Committee was forthcoming, but the USOC has said all along it will not send a team to Moscow if Russian troops remain in Afghanistan. The Carter administration has said no American athletes would go to Moscow if the Russians weren't out of Afghanistan by the 20th of February. So whether February 20th or May 24th is the deadline, it seems increasingly likely the 1980 Summer Olympics will take place without United States participation. Richard Wagner, CBS News, Lake Placid, New York.
More news when the World Tonight continues.
There's a super sale going on now at Shepherd Cadillac in Menlo Park. They have a $2 million inventory of cars that must be sold. Here's one example of the kind of buy that you can make if you act now. A brand new 1980 Cadillac Coupe DeVille can be yours for just $10,940. That's a brand new car, not a demonstrator, serial number 352578. And you can buy or lease this car for just $10,940. Right now, Shepherd Cadillac has more cars on sale than most dealers have cars. This is your opportunity, then, to drive home in a revolutionary new Seville, a prestigious Eldorado, popular Coupe DeVille, or any other new Cadillac at savings so great, you must see the prices to believe them. Shepherd Cadillac is in Menlo Park on the El Camino Real, a mile north of the Stanford campus. People say it's the best place in the Bay Area to buy a car.
It was 1971, and hijacking was the style. A man calling himself Dan Cooper got in the act, hijacked a Northwest Airlines plane, demanded and got $200,000 in ransom, and parachuted from the plane with it. He hasn't been heard from since, but now the FBI has a clue. Fred Graham reports.
Authorities had not known where in the far west Cooper had bailed out of the hijacked 727 jet because he had forced the crew into the cockpit. But today, a family picnicking along the Columbia River just north of Vancouver, Washington, found a rotting bundle of greenbacks, $5,000 held together with a rubber band, that bore the serial number of the ransom money given to Cooper. FBI agents were moving late today to quickly seal off the area from fortune-hunting sightseers, and a team of agents will shortly begin to comb the area. Special Agent Bill Williams of the FBI Portland office said it was possible that the bundle of money had washed into the Columbia River from one of its tributaries, which could require a search of a wide area around Vancouver. No one would speculate what this means about the fate of the legendary B.D. Cooper, but one explanation could be that he died in the parachute jump and that some of the bundles of cash spilled into a stream. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
The Wall Street Report in a moment.
Arkwright Boston, a most unusual insurance company, wants you to consider this. There's a new brand of international conquest. It isn't called war, it's called investment. And American business people are bearing the brunt of it.
Hey, Harry, come on, we're late for work.
Here I am, that darn alarm clock.
Where's Joe? Here he comes. Hey, look at him run. Hey, Joe, you trying out for the Super Bowl? Okay, you guys, let's get this Green Hulk on the road. Hey, wait a minute. Where's Chris? Turn on the radio. She's on KCBS 74.
Well, the latest on the traffic situation, here's Chris Bretcher.
We're doing very well this morning, Al. We have no stalls or accidents reported anywhere through the South Bay.
I don't know
now.
How we'd get to that work without South Chris. She knows Bay Area traffic inside out.
My mother even listens to her to keep track of BART. Chris knows what Muni's doing.
Yeah, her timing's perfect. Every day we're on the road, she's on the air. Chris Bretcher on KCBS. She can ride shotgun for us anytime.
And you three guys in the Green Hulk, have a good day.
Hey, neat. Listen.
Hey.
Stocks closed higher on Wall Street today. The Dow Jones Industrials closed around 899, up 9.39. The average price per share was up 21 cents on the New York Exchange, volume 48 million shares. The average price was up 16 cents in trading on the American Exchange. Wall Street on this World Tonight. The prosecution rested its case today in a trial that will go down in automotive history. In 1978, three teenagers were killed in the fire that swept their Pinto automobile when it was hit from the rear, and the Ford Motor Company stands accused of reckless homicide. Bob McNamara reports on the prosecution case.
6 weeks after this trial began, the prosecution rested its case, a case built largely on the testimony of one man. Harley Kopp, who for 20 years was a top Ford engineering executive, testified Ford rushed the Pinto into production, sacrificed safety for profit, and ignored warnings the car was prone to catch fire in rear-end collisions. Kopp said Lee Iacocca, the president of Ford at the time the Pinto went into production in 1971, was responsible for putting an unsafe car on the market. Iacocca, Kopp said, was the father of the Pinto, and his ambitions overbalanced his sense of morality. Through a spokesman, Iacocca, now president of Chrysler Corporation, had no comment. In defending Ford against the charges of reckless homicide, Chief Defense Attorney James Neal contended the 1973 Pinto was not unique, that it was no different from other subcompacts of that era. When the prosecution rested its case, late today the defense asked the judge that the case be dismissed for lack of proof. But Judge Harold Staffelt refused, and tomorrow Ford will begin presenting its side of the case. Bob McNamara, CBS News, Winnemac, Indiana.
Terrorists from the Red Brigade struck in Italy again today, this time outside a classroom in the University of Rome. The target was a prominent judge who was teaching a law class. Police say he died almost instantly from 7 bullet wounds. A man and a woman in ski masks escaped. It's the 11th political murder in Italy this year. The World Tonight continues after this message.
Come with me on a journey through the corridors of time itself. A voyage through history to where history began. Sail in a towering 24,000-ton citadel through seas that Homer sailed. To the Mediterranean. To the grandeur of Greece, Egypt, Israel, and more. Returning to the start of civilization in the most civilized manner of all. Cruising, absolutely first class, on Norwegian-America Line. From May to October, 13 different two-week cruises await your pleasure. On TWA, fly to meet the Norwegian-registered Saga Fjord, waiting in Genoa. The cruise alone? A civilized $1,970 to $3,710 per person, double occupancy. Absolutely first class. Come with me into history itself. A cruise through Norwegian-America Line's Mediterranean. It's about time.
See your absolutely first-class travel agent at Bungie Travel, 116 University Avenue in Palo Alto.
Senator Kennedy brought his presidential campaign to the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University today, and once again it was a slashing attack on President Carter's foreign policy. Jed Duval reports.
It is a passive presidency, Kennedy contended, with a helter-skelter attitude that stands to get America in trouble overseas.
Many odds. How all this has come to pass. The short answer is that we do not have a measured foreign policy that can prevent crisis and respond to it without excessive rhetoric. The last gasp of a failed foreign policy is war. And that is what this administration has brought us to believe we faced in 1980. No president should be reelected because he happened to be standing there when his foreign policy collapsed around him.
And on Iran, something new from the senator, the claim that Mr. Carter has now come to see things Kennedy's way, including the idea of a commission to investigate the deposed Shah. Jed Duval, CBS News, with the Kennedy campaign in Boston.
Kennedy coupled his attack on the president's foreign policy with what he calls his Rose Garden policy. Roger Mudd takes a look at this campaign issue.
The term Rose Garden strategy got started during the 76 campaign when Gerry Ford used the Rose Garden as a backdrop for picture-taking and bill signing and statement issuing. While Jimmy Carter crisscrossed the country campaigning, Gerry Ford remained at home trying to look presidential. Today, 4 years later, President Carter is following the same strategy, refusing to campaign as long as Iran holds the 50 Americans hostage. But there's some evidence the Carter strategy is beginning to cut the wrong way, and that the president's reduced margin over Edward Kennedy in the caucuses in Maine was because of his refusal to campaign. Carter campaign chairman Robert Strauss insists the people don't want their president being partisan during a foreign crisis.
The truth, the simple truth of the matter is, it isn't a question of his not having time to get away. The president is blessed, and this nation is blessed right now with unity, great unity. More than we've had since any time since Vietnam, I guess. At a time when we have 50 hostages, the president feels very strongly that he's engaging in highly public, highly partisan, highly vocal debate can only be divisive.
The New Hampshire primary in 2 weeks may help answer the question that now hangs over the Carter campaign. Do the voters really not want their president campaigning during a foreign crisis, or do they think he is simply hiding in the Rose Garden to avoid a debate? Roger Mudd, CBS News, Washington.
And that's The World Tonight, Tuesday, February 12th. This is Douglas Edwards, CBS News.